Now today, we're turning your attention once more to Hebrews chapter 11. Our study for today will only cover three verses, but in those three verses we shall look at three different characters. Let me read them to you, verses 20, 21 and 22 of Hebrews chapter 11. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. I'm sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of these verses. And I want you to note now the three men that are mentioned successively in the verses. First we have Isaac, who was the son of Abraham. Perhaps you took notice of the fact that in our last message, when we were dealing with Abraham, that he is given quite a lengthy portion in this epistle and in this chapter, from verse 8 right through to verse 19. And then Isaac is only given one verse. Likewise, Jacob and Joseph. And so for each of these men there's only one verse, and yet Abraham had such a long portion. Perhaps there's reasons for it. But now when we come to discuss and consider these men, I suggest that here in Isaac we have what we might call the pledge of faith. But when you come to verse 21, dealing with Jacob, we are faced there with what we might term the privilege of faith. Then in verse 22, when we think of Joseph, we relate him to the prophecy of faith. So we have the pledge of faith in connection with Isaac in verse 20. Now, in order to understand something about Isaac, you would have to go back again to the book of Genesis and read there regarding the historical account of his life. Now, perhaps when you were children in the Sunday school, one of the favorite Bible stories that you were told was the story about Abraham and Isaac going that day up Mount Moriah. And somehow or another, there was projected into your young mind the idea of Isaac being a little boy, going hand in hand with his father as they climbed the mountain. I want to remind you that Isaac was no little boy when he went up Mount Moriah with his father. He may have been over 30 years of age, a full-grown man. He could quite easily, no doubt, have taken his father and bound his father and placed him on the altar. However, that is one of the outstanding incidents in the life of Isaac that most of us are familiar with. But I might say this, that when we consider that in connection with Abraham, it was an act of faith on Abraham's part. It was not Isaac who initiated the thought whatsoever. It was God who spoke to Abraham, not to Isaac. And it was Abraham who was obedient to God, even not knowing why God asked him to do it. So far as Isaac was concerned, he was only passive, simply went with his father and agreed with his father. But his action was simply passive, that's all. Then you move on from there, and another outstanding incident in the life of Isaac was the day he was married. But it may surprise some of you when I tell you again that Isaac had little or nothing to do with his marriage, for the simple reason he simply agreed with what his father proposed. And the servant was sent away to get the bride for Isaac. And when the servant brought the bride back, Isaac simply accepted her. That's all. He didn't choose her in the first place. She was chosen for him. And so when Rebekah came, Isaac simply accepted the bride that was brought to him. I mention this again to show that that was an act wherein he was simply passive. He did not initiate the idea. Then again, you'll find that when you read over the life of Isaac, he began to deteriorate. He became blind, as it were, and was governed by the desires of the flesh. About the only outstanding thing that can be said to the credit of Isaac was the fact that he was a man who was industrious in certain ways, quite a worker. He was always digging wells in order to provide refreshment for himself and his family, and those of the camp, so to speak. He was a man who was characterized by well digging. In fact, I might mention this as a point of interest, that Abraham, his father, was a man who was always raising altars. Wherever he went, it was indicated that Abraham raised an altar. And in raising his altar, that was bearing a testimony to the people around him that he was a worshipper of Jehovah. Isaac was a man who was always digging wells. When you come to study the life of Jacob, you'll discover that Jacob was a man who was always marked by raising pillars. Pillars were raised as memorials, so he was always raising his memorial pillars, but Isaac was a man who was simply digging wells. But there comes a cloud on the life of Isaac. As I have indicated, he deteriorated. And in his old age is what you and I might have said today in present day language, a kind of backslider. However, when you come here to Hebrews chapter 11, our attention is drawn to something that he did at the very end. It's a very simple statement. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. Now let me say, that right here we have what we might call the pledge of faith. Here we find in this great act of Isaac, as mentioned in Hebrews 11, we see him overcoming the will of the flesh. After all, there were failures in his life, but the failures in the life of Isaac are eclipsed by his act of faith. Now, according to Genesis 27, Isaac desired to act according to fleshly impulses. But when this was overruled by God, then Isaac submitted to the divine will and upheld the blessing pronounced on Jacob, and by faith he affirmed this blessing at the opening of Genesis chapter 28. He blessed his sons concerning things to come. And this was his expression of faith. That's what is mentioned here in Hebrews 11. Now, if you were to take time and go back to Genesis 27 and Genesis 28, you will find here an old man on his bed, and the desires of the flesh are about to govern him. Oh, he liked the savory meat that his son could bring to him. And so he wanted the savory meat of Esau. In that home, Isaac favored the firstborn, who was Esau. But the mother, Rebekah, she favored Jacob. So that father and mother had their favorites. Oh, there was only two sons in the family, but they had their favorites. And so you'll find that Isaac favored Esau, and Jacob was favored by his mother. However, when the time came when Isaac thought he should pronounce his blessings, for he thought he was dying, although he lived for a number of years after that, he decided he was going to bless Esau. Now remember, it had been perfectly clear in a previous chapter that God said the elder would serve the younger. That is, the great blessing that was pronounced on Abraham and confirmed to Isaac was to be passed on to Jacob. That was made perfectly clear. That was the will of God. Here was a man then who had deteriorated to such a point, he was willing to turn the will of God to one side, to carry out his own will, that is, the will of the flesh. He was going to do this by stimulating the flesh. He was going to stimulate, as it were, his love for Esau. And if Esau would just bring him in that dish of good savory meat, he would take it and he would bless his son. Isaac knew deep down in his heart that that was wrong. That was the will of the flesh. Therefore, he could not possibly do that by faith. Where the flesh comes in, faith must go out. But now, if you're accustomed to reading those chapters, you'll realize that something happened there. Now, don't think for a moment that I am excusing Rebecca for the deception that she used on that occasion. And I'm not excusing Jacob for becoming a party to it. He was just as equally wrong as his mother. But the fact is this, that God overruled that. And the blessing actually came on Jacob. Now, when Isaac found out how he had been cheated, the moment he found that out, then he realized how wrong it was for him to pronounce a blessing on Esau that was to be pronounced on Jacob. So when you come to chapter 28, he acts by faith, that is, he overcomes the will of the flesh. Now he acts by faith, and here we have the pledge of faith, where he pronounces the true blessing upon Jacob and upon Esau. Now that is exactly what is set forth in verse 20 of Hebrews chapter 11. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. The order here is reversed, you see. Esau was the firstborn, but Jacob is mentioned first because the blessing that was pronounced upon Abraham and confirmed to Isaac was now brought down to Jacob. Isaac acted there by faith, placing all his confidence in God. Now it's a good thing, even if a person had made mistakes in life, that when it comes near the end, when one's faith is tested, that we're prepared and able, like Isaac, to lay all our confidence in God and do the thing that is well pleasing to God, the thing that is right with God. So here we find faith overcoming the will of the flesh. In Isaac, the will of the flesh said, bless Esau and Jacob. But the will of God was this, bless Jacob with the blessing, and then Esau. Now you pass from there into verse 21. And here the focus now is on Jacob, a man who lived a very checkered life. Now, when Jacob pronounced his blessing upon the sons of Joseph, it was by faith. It could not be by sight, since he was old and almost blind. It was an intelligent and determined act, crossing his hands and placing the right hand upon the head of Ephraim. He could not be deferred by the interference of Joseph. Now notice exactly what it says in our verse. By faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. It's a very beautiful picture. You find it when you go way back to the book of Genesis and chapter 48. I have remarked in previous studies, and I'll mention it again here today, that is a very interesting thing that Jacob looked after his son Joseph for the first 17 years of Joseph's life. When he was a boy of 17, it was then he was wrenched, as it were, from his father's home, and his brothers sold him as a slave down to Egypt. But the man who looked after his son for the first 17 years of his life was cared for by that same son, Joseph. He cared for his father the last 17 years of Jacob's life. The whole thing was reversed. And Jacob had gone down to Egypt during the time of the famine. He continued to live there, and he was down in Egypt for the last 17 years of his life. But the time has come now, and he knows that the end is near. I think we must all agree, it's when the end is drawing near that one's faith is really tested. Now it comes as the test to Jacob. May I suggest that if in Isaac, the one we have just talked about, if we see faith overcoming the will of the flesh, I'm going to suggest here in Jacob we see faith overcoming the will of man. The will of man must not be put in place of confidence in God. Life must be lived on the principle of that confidence in God. Now, when Joseph brought his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and he brought them to his father, that is Jacob, Jacob wanted to bless his two grandchildren. I want to remind you that Jacob said to Joseph, "Joseph, I didn't expect even to see you again. I thought you were dead. I expected to go down to the grave mourning for you. But God has been gracious to us, and God has brought me here not only to see your face again, but to see your seed, that is, the two boys." And now Jacob is going to bless the lads. Remember, throughout his lifetime, Jacob was a man who was always looking for the blessing for himself. He wanted the blessing. But now, in the end, he's willing to bless others. That's love. And it's grace. And so Joseph brings the two boys forward. Now, it was the custom when a grandfather or a father was going to pronounce a blessing on his offspring, he would lay his hand upon their head. Now here are the two boys, and Joseph is bringing them forward. He brings forward the firstborn, that is Manasseh, and he puts Manasseh right in front of his father's right hand. And he brings Ephraim, the younger of the two, and he brings him forward to his father's left hand, expecting his father to lift his two hands and to lay his right hand on the head of the oldest one, Manasseh, and to lift his left hand and put it on the head of Ephraim. But old Jacob didn't do that. He was going to bless these boys. And what our text says is this: by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph. Then he worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. When you go back to the book of Genesis, here is what you find: that Jacob crossed his hands. He put his right hand on the head of Ephraim, put his left hand on the head of Manasseh. And Joseph was going to interfere and says, "No, no, father, you're doing the wrong thing. You can't see too well. I want you to put your right hand on Manasseh's head. He's the firstborn. And I want you to put your left hand on Ephraim's head." And in effect now, Jacob says to his son, "Don't worry, Joseph, I know what I'm doing." And so he crossed his hands, and under that sign of the cross, he puts the right hand blessing on the head of Ephraim, and the left hand blessing on the head of Manasseh. Now, I wonder, why did he do that? Because Hebrews chapter 11 says he did it by faith. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph. I tell you that I believe here was intelligent blessing. He understood then a great principle that God had been teaching him throughout his life. That is, that the elder would serve the younger. Now, the will of Joseph was for the blessing to come on the head of Manasseh, the eldest. But that was not the will of God. And so here is Jacob acting by faith and overcoming the will of man. And so he gives the blessing to Ephraim. Now, that being so then, you could follow through the history of Ephraim and the history of Manasseh and see how these blessings worked out. Now, when we come to verse 22, the focus now is on Joseph, who was the son of Jacob. Now, Joseph had a long life, great changes. Many of you are familiar with some of the incidents in his life, about his dreams, about being sold as a slave, how he was maligned in the house of Potiphar by a wicked woman, put down into the jail, ultimately being brought before Pharaoh, being made the ruler in Egypt next to Pharaoh, and so on. You know the history of Joseph. But isn't it strange that throughout the long history of this wonderful man, all we've got in Hebrews 11 is one verse: by faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. You see, the end has come. Here you have the faith of Joseph after he had had so many years down in Egypt. And now you'll find that here's the man who is going to speak and speak in faith. It's a prophecy. Here's a man who's prepared to wait, and to wait patiently for God's time. He had learned that by his experiences. It's no use trying to rush it. He said one day to the butler, he said, "When it's well with thee, remember me." But the man forgot Joseph. But Joseph, in his dying hours, looked beyond the burdens and the blessings of this life, and spoke of that which God had promised to do. He declined the usual burying in an Egyptian tomb with all its honor, but he instructed his people to give him a simple burial in the land of promise. So it is that when he was dying, he said, "When I die now, you'll just put me in a coffin, and you won't bury me down here in Egypt. You'll just keep my coffin here, keep my casket. And when God visits you and takes you out of this land and takes you to the promised land, carry my remains with you and bury them in the land of promise." And so it was when they left the land of Egypt, they took with them the coffin that contained the remains of Joseph, the man who had been their saviour. They carried it up into Egypt for 40 years, and only when you come to the last chapter of the book of Joshua do you learn how that they buried him at Shechem. He was a man who spoke in faith. 'Twas the prophecy of faith, says, God will visit you. And when he visits you and you leave, take with you what is in that coffin, be my remains. So in these three men, here we have faith overcoming the will of the flesh, overcoming the will of man, and waiting patiently for God's time for final redemption.